This is the Secrets of Spiritual Sex podcast, expanding our experience of sex, intimacy, and relationships with tools, tips, and techniques from industry experts and real-life conversation. I am your host, Nikki Rhodes.
So welcome, Cam Fraser, a dear friend of mine, someone who I was lucky enough to meet and whose partner me and Franco had an amazing lunch with and who I've followed ever since, to the Secrets of Spiritual Sex podcast. It's so awesome to have you.
Yeah, thanks so much for inviting me on. I feel honored to be here.
Yeah, so great to get a male perspective. I know that a lot of your work focuses on men and pleasure and myth busting a whole lot of the crap that's out there, the dominant discourse around men and what they find, you know, attractive and everything. And a lot of my work also is focused not just in the women's realm, but also on educating, learning from and learning with men. So I'm so, so grateful for you to hold down this important beacon. And you know, with this podcast, we look at, I'm really interested in looking at speaking to people who are interested in sex as the multidimensional experience it is. And so, any light you can shed on that regarding men and pleasure and your own journey, let's start.
Well, I guess like I love the idea of sex being multidimensional, because there's this, to go straight into like myths around men and masculinity and sexuality, is like a lot of times there's this, I find this common, like maybe cultural narrative around men thinking that sex is just one dimensional, right? There's this like myth that guys are only interested in sex for the physical reasons, right? That it's just physical for men, that they don't want any emotional, deeper, intimate connection, that it's not spiritual for them. It's just like this physical act and that's all it is, right? So I kind of feel like there's, you know, that, and that's approaching it from like one dimension, you know, not acknowledging that there's, you know, multi dimensions to sex. So I really, and that's something that I guess like, you know, for my own journey, that was something that I had to grapple with as well. Like I guess played into that narrative myself. I was being told that as a guy, I should only be interested in the physical side of things. Not only was like media and, you know, porn telling me that, but, you know, my friends, my mates were telling me, you know, oh, what's wrong with you for wanting something deeper? What's wrong with you for talking about all this intimacy stuff? Like you just need to like, you know, get it in, get it off, and yeah, and then get out. You know, it was like this this narrative around just like only focusing on the physical side of things. So as I started doing the work, you know, not only on my own sexuality, because I was going through a bunch of like sexual dysfunction stuff because of this narrative that I was playing into. I was like, you know, sex is supposed to just be this, but like that's not what I wanted. But I was, you know, I was really conflicted internally about this. So that was manifesting as like all these issues for me. As soon as I started to kind of like grapple with that and overcome it and do the work on it, and then started to work with other men as well and helped create space for them to open up about their insecurities or their concerns or their issues around sex, started to become a bit more vulnerable when they talked about it, we started to realize and recognize sex is this multidimensional thing, right? Guys are actually craving intimacy. Guys are actually looking for something a little bit deeper. Guys are looking to express themselves. They do want to tap into something that's a bit more spiritual. They do want to, you know, they do want to open up the container for sex to be more than just this one-dimensional thing. But, you know, oftentimes the, you know, the narrative is like really, really strong for guys. And because it's, you know, because it's then reinforced by all their mates, they get minimized or ridiculed or, you know, teased or bullied for trying to step outside of that like man box that they've been put in, or that society's kind of put them in terms of the way that they're supposed to be a sexual man, right? There's a very, very linear, narrow way that guys are supposed to express themselves sexually. And if they step outside of that, because there's no real models for it, right? There's not a lot of men that are modeling this healthy expression of masculinity in a multidimensional kind of way. They get teased and they get bullied. And I certainly, you know, felt that and experienced that when I started doing all this work. Guys were like, what the fuck's wrong with you? You know, sex is just supposed to be emotionless and physical, and you know, why would you even want to make it a little bit deeper or go into a different realm? So definitely have come across that in my own work and in my own experience as well. And I love that it's something that you're, you know, that's the approach that you're taking, is this multidimensional approach, because it's so true and so needed. Yeah,
wow, thank you so much. You speak to fear, and fear is so prevalent within intimacy, and we are all afraid. You know, we have a few bad experiences, and to guard the heart and in deeply, deeply vulnerable moments feels almost, feels necessary, and it feels automatic after a while. And this here, unfortunately, prevents, I would say, us from experiencing the possibilities that lie within deep connection, that lie within vulnerability, that lie within not just making love with your cock, but making love with sort of like a more full body experience. Expectations, though, are a full-on for men. They should be hard, and they should go for a long time, and they should be, you should know what we want, even if we don't. What are the expectations or sort of fear-based narratives do you see with your clients in your work?
I think you're right. Like, fear is this big limiting thing that you know, puts parameters and confines the experience that a lot of men, I mean, people in general, but speaking to men more specifically, can experience with regards to their pleasure and their sexuality. And I think, like, a lot of men will, whether they do it consciously or unconsciously, whatever, will play into the narrative that sex is just physical for them, because if they admit that it's anything deeper, then there's the, you know, that then opens up this can of worms of around vulnerabilities and insecurities. And, you know, if they admit that they're looking for intimacy, if they admit that they're looking for something more emotional, if they admit that they're looking for something more than just this physical act, then it opens up this door to their heart, or to their feelings and to their emotions, which is pretty scary for a lot of guys, because they're not given a framework to work through that. They're oftentimes ridiculed for expressing themselves or expressing anything other than, like, what's socially sanctioned, which is anger and maybe grief at the loss of a friend or a parent or whatever it is. Like, there's, in terms of emotional expressions and what society has deemed acceptable for guys, there's only like a few things that are acceptable for them. So for them to like start to, like, I remember when I started doing this work and I started to have sex that was a bit more, you know, added a bit more dimensions to it, there'd be times where in the middle of lovemaking, like, I would start crying, I would start, you know, convulsing, like, things would start coming up. Same thing happened when I was starting to practice yoga for the first time and started to really get into the deep unraveling of all the tension in my body, and started to open up to different things. You know, emotions started to come up, stuff that I'd been holding onto and that I'd been, you know, that had caused tension and constriction and contraction in my body that I just kind of had stagnant there. As soon as I started to move it by breathing and opening up into, you know, the heart space and moving sexual energy through my body, these emotions started unlocking and started to pop up for me. And thank goodness I was doing the work and had teachers and had people to guide me through how to process those emotions. But I think a lot of guys, you know, because they're afraid of what emotions might come up or what might surface, or even the fear of how their partner is going to react to that as well, because of this idea of, like, men are supposed to be manly and they're not supposed to express emotions, and if they do, they'll be considered less of a man and their partner will think less of them, and they'll be, you know, their partner will reject them, or they'll, you know, whatever it might be, this kind of fear mentality of what they'll look like if they start to deviate from this, you know, narrow way of what it means to be a man. So they'll push that aside, and they'll play into that narrative of, like, okay, I've just got to be this physical guy who just gets an erection and who just, you know, fucks all night and, you know, has a ejaculation at the end of it, like, real mainstream porn star style way of having sex. Because, like, it's safe, right? It's a safe thing to do. It's safe to kind of do that. But I feel like a lot of guys are having sexual dysfunction issues, and I get guys messaging me all the time around, like, you know, I'm coming too quickly, or I'm not able to get an erection, I'm not able to maintain an erection, something's coming up for me sexually. Because there is, like, in my own story, is that little or not so little confliction internally of, like, you know, I'm doing this because this is what I'm supposed to do, this is what I've been told I should want, this is what I've been told I should should show up sexually, but it's not exactly what I want, and I'm actually, you know, not fully expressing and not fully opening. And so it causes these, you know, these issues. And a lot of guys don't realize that if they're not, you know, if they're not, you know, erections, for example, are usually a pretty good indicator of, like, your feelings. Like, if you're not, you know, getting an erection, or if you're not maintaining an erection, if you're not feeling a lot of sensation around your cock, then it's usually an indicator that you're not, like, you're not wanting to have sex, that it's not something that you're emotionally invested in. It's not something that you're emotionally turned on by. It's not something that you are feeling connected to. So oftentimes one of the things that, you know, I work with around guys is like, instead of getting them to do all this stuff to you know, strengthen their erection, you know, because that's what a lot of guys come to me. They want the tips and the tricks to you know, pelvic floor exercises to firm up their erection. Instead of going down that path with them, I'll go down the emotional and vulnerability path, and I'll be like, let's talk about, you know, what it is that sex means to you. What are you trying to get from it? Like, what is it that you're trying to do with your partner? Like, how connected to your partner are you? Oftentimes there's a lot of stuff that comes up there. And if we work through the emotional side of things and they start to open up and you know, I guess realize or recognize or acknowledge the deeper aspects of their sexual encounters, their sexual experiences, and they start to work through that and overcome that, their erections will come, you know, and it's oftentimes the mental anxiety and emotional disconnect which is stopping them from functioning in the way that they want to function.
Wow, this is super interesting, because I mean, you're a young guy, you know, you're a young guy who realized that the more you sort of became disconnected from your body, the more that you sort of left yourself almost in a way to get things done, the more constriction and tightness you faced. And you said, like, the early onset of some pretty significant issues that if left unattended or if left ignored could certainly increase into something that could cause a lot more of a problem. And We see this fear to be in the moment, this fear to be like truly present with what is. Yet it's that male presence that we as women so long for. I have many clients saying to me, he's just not there. Or I want him to show up more honestly. Or I don't mind if he cries or vulnerable or whatever, but he's just not there. And I mean, you know, there's lots that could be happening there in terms of relationship dynamic and communication struggles and all that. We're not putting that on the men. But how do you encourage men to go into their bodies when it feels so damn scary, when they're not long-haired yoga teachers living in a hippie lifestyle? You know, how do you reach those men who perhaps have been taught to harden and to escape?
Yeah, well, I think it was Jim Morrison that said the greatest fear is the fear of being yourself, is like the freedom to be yourself. And like, so many people are showing up inauthentically when it comes to their sexual expressions and sexual experience, because of the taboos and the stories and the stigma and all this kind of other stuff that's floating around. But like the way that we start to then show up, you know, with, you know, be more in the moment and notice what's happening and be present with our partners, like get clear. I always like to get clear on like what presence is. And so like it's a word that's tossed around a lot in like the spiritual tantra communities. Yeah. So the idea of presence for me, I suppose, is like heightened awareness of what's happening in your body in that moment. So it's like, you know, when you're, And I get guys to talk about this, I'm like, don't talk about the type of energy that you're feeling. Don't say you feel something positive or negative. I'm like, give me descriptions of the sensations in your body right now when you're what are you physically feeling? And so like, are you feeling constriction and tightness in your chest? Are you feeling looseness and warmth in your shoulders? Like, what are you actually feeling? And that's the way that I start to get guys being more present in the moment and showing up and being able to like be there in that space with their partner, is because they actually start to notice what's happening in their body. So a lot of times guys are up here, you know, I'm going to come too quickly, or she's, you know, I'm not, guys have body image issues as well. They're like, oh, I don't look, you know, I don't have a six pack, or, you know, I'm not going to be big enough for her, or she's not going to, whatever it is. So a lot of guys are up here, up in their head when it comes to, you know, their sexual encounters and sexual experience. It's like, okay, one of the easiest ways to start being more present in the moment is to start noticing how your body feels. You know, where are you feeling pleasure in that moment? Where are you feeling contraction in that moment? And then once you've started to build that noticing and that awareness, it's like, okay, now that you've got that foundational kind of understanding of what it is that you're looking for, and you're paying attention, you're listening to your body, then start to do certain things. So it's like, okay, what if I start to breathe down in my diaphragm? What if I start to lower my breath and slow it down and take deep belly breaths? How does that change what I'm experiencing? How does it change what I'm noticing in my body? If I start to move my spine and start to open up my shoulders and you know, roll the body and move from the hips, what do I notice when I do that? How does that change the awareness in my body? And then like the second part of this is like starting to build, I guess, like you would maybe call it intuition, or how to like strategies and tips. And this is like an ongoing learning process of like how to change things. So it's like, you know, now that you've given all these tools, I suppose, for like breathing and moving and communicating, whatever it is, it's like if you're feeling one thing, if you're feeling contraction, and or if you're noticing contraction in your partner, you're noticing tension, you're noticing, you know, shutting down, if you're noticing like disconnect or whatever it might be, and you want to shift it into going deeper and opening up and surrendering, it's like, okay, how do I do that? So it's like listening to your partner's body, feeling into that moment, feeling into your own body. It's like, okay, what do I need in this moment? And oftentimes that requires a bit of like intuition, requires a bit of like reading the space, reading the energy, and relying on the tools that you've kind of developed to like, okay, do I need to help my partner breathe a little bit softer? Is she kind of like breathing up into her chest? Or do I need to, you know, move a little bit with her? Or do I need to like not rush for penetration? Do I need to hold back from penetration for a bit? Like what's needed in this moment? So it's like reacting to what's happening in that moment is like the second half of presence, at least in my opinion as well.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, this is epic. I'm thinking right now of a client that I worked with, and he was like an ex NBA, super powerful, massive guy. Right. And they'd been together 15 years and they're having an amazing, beautiful sex life, but it got to a stage. They said, you know, what else is there? And that's again why I'm doing this podcast. People said, what else is there? And you're speaking, and what I told him as well is that you've got the ability now to rewrite how it goes for you. You've got the ability now to rewrite all of your future sexual experiences in a really positive, empowering, and inquiring way, right? Because that term presence, we don't really know what it means. It's a term that gets thrown around so much, like you say, but like really identifying the infinite number of possibilities that lie within that present moment. So I said to him, look, I want you to do something different for me. I want you to try tonight, because he wanted just direction. You know, it was hard for him to think sort of in different kind of ways in this realm. It had been, he was a lot older, and it had been a certain way for a long time. And I said, I want you to enter her when you're ready, and when the time is right for both of you, and to go really slow, and perhaps even just to stop, right? And just to stop. He laughed at me. He said, what is this going to do? It's not going to fix anything. Come on. Anyway, I got this call quite early the next morning, and he said, what did you do? I said, well, I don't know. What did I do? Why did you tell me to do that? And basically what had happened, he said, as he entered her and they looked at each other, and he said he felt her for the first time, he thinks, in about 15 years. He truly saw and noticed what he was doing, and he ended up actually, you know, ejaculating quite fast without sort of realizing, because he was so overcome with emotion and feeling, and that was, you know, something he wanted to, he'd found it hard to connect during sex, and in one small moment, he was absolutely sort of open to this pleasure, and he said, I'm used to just fast and hard and for a long time, and that's how I do it, but to slow down, I totally surprised myself. The hardest he'd felt, the more sort of engaged he'd felt for a really long time. So getting into the body, scary but so necessary, right?
Yeah, and you speak into something there that is also adds to this fear as well, because a lot of guys, when they start to do this work, when they start to notice more sensation in the body, when they start to connect deeper to their partner, when they start to, I guess, when they start to experience more pleasure by doing this, like all this stuff allows you to experience more pleasure, is that it'll almost become overwhelming for them, and they'll come quicker than they usually have. So they might have some, you know, they might have some premature ejaculation issues, you know, maybe undiagnosed or, you know, self-diagnosed to start with. And then they might like develop some strategies to, you know, to help themselves last longer. So they might like, you know, I think a lot of guys, you know, send themselves somewhere in their head. They'll think of like grandma on the toilet or whatever it might be, some horrible picture that like dials down their pleasure, dials down their sexuality, and helps them last longer. So really they're checking out and they're diminishing the amount of pleasure that they feel. And that's, you know, that's the way they can kind of just go hard and fast. Like a lot of porn stars will say, the way that they last for a long period of time is by like, I've read some guys about like, they bite their finger super hard when they're off camera, or they bite their cheek really hard, and they inflict pain on themselves so that they can just check out of that experience of pleasure and not focus on what they're feeling, so they can just keep on going like a machine for hours on end or whatever it might be.
I have to interrupt you. That's deeply, deeply upsetting.
Yeah, like, yeah. And it's the model that a lot of guys are following, right? It's they're like, oh, I just need to go for as long as I can. And the way that I do that is by checking out from what I'm experiencing. By diminishing the amount of pleasure that I feel, I can keep on going. I can keep on pounding away. I can keep on going hard and fast for whatever it is. So as soon as they start to do this work and actually start to connect again to their sensations and their pleasure and notice what they're feeling, you know, connect to their partner, be turned on by her, be in that space with her, usually what will happen is they'll come quite quickly. And that's scary for them as well, because they're like, oh my God, I'm supposed to be doing this work. And maybe their teacher hasn't, you know, if they are doing work with a teacher, their teacher hasn't spoken into that or doesn't, you know, think that it's a thing to speak into. But it's like a lot of guys get turned off by stepping into the world of sexuality and tantra and stuff, because they start to do one thing and the first time they do it, they come quite quickly. And they're like, oh, fuck, like that was exactly the opposite of what I thought was supposed to happen. And so there's a period of time there. It's like a grace period where they've got to like rework on like shifting their mindset from checking out to checking in and deepening their pleasure, but then also learning how to like just breathe through it and move through it and allow themselves to like not get caught up in that overcoming or the overarching kind of sensation of pleasure that makes them want to come as quick as possible. So that's where all like the transition and the guidance is needed from someone who knows what they're doing.
Totally. It's the first step to experiencing more than just a friction-based sexual experience. It's the first step to get out of the cheeseburger, fast food, you know, it tastes great and it's super fast and it's super hot. And then it's like, oh, I don't feel good. And you promise you won't do it for a while. Then a couple of days later, you see yourself pulling into the drive-thru again. It's such a good analogy. And it's so worth working through the addiction to fast food, because you get this delicious tasting salad or big home-cooked meal or whatever. It's like, I feel great on all levels. And so you'd say persevere through that stage without checking out. You know, sex is like a microcosm, don't you think, for sort of what's how we're sort of reacting or how we're living or how we're responding to our day-to-day lives. So for these men who are wanting to step into this work, I think it's deeply, deeply admirable. There's a lot of also judgment and issues around the anus and men and receiving and homosexuality and assumption. Let's go to some of these sort of more touchy, edgier topics here. I know that the best lovers I've experienced are those who are willing to receive in ways as well as be the giver. There's a dance between different energies. There's a claiming of polarities, two different sort of energetic forces. It's like a dance. What can you share on the anal mysteries?
Yeah, so like the first thing I'll say is this is a piece of advice from people in the BDSM community, which is like people that are playing, you know, I suppose in the power play dynamics of domination and submission, is don't do anything to another person that you haven't had done to yourself. Right. So that's almost like a rule of thumb in the BDSM community, at least from the people I've spoken to anyway. And so like I try and extend that to more vanilla style sex, you know, and oftentimes a lot of men, right, for the most part, are penetrating their partners without ever having been penetrated themselves. So it's like, how do you really know how it feels to be penetrated if you've never actually had that done, you know, for you or to you? So it's like, you know, taking that rule of thumb of like, you know, never doing something to someone if you've never had that done to you. It's like, how can you really be penetrating these women or these people without having ever experienced penetration yourself? And so like that's often the way I try and frame it, because it takes a little bit of like the oftentimes the guys that I work with, if I go straight into the energetics of things or into the spiritual language, into the woo-woo, as some guys like to say, it loses them a little bit. So I try and dial it back to like the more practical, like here's just, you know, here's some facts. And another fact is like from empirical data as well, from studies that we've done, is we've had a look at guys who have had that are in heterosexual couples or in heterosexual relationships, and they've had some type of anal penetration on them, or some type of anal play, or some type of prostate play, and then they've polled or they've surveyed the female partners of these guys, and the kind of results came back, and the guys that have had this anal experience themselves are considered better lovers by their, you know, and have more sexual satisfaction in their partners than the guys who don't have any type of experience with anal penetration. So it's kind of playing into this idea of like guys that have had some type of penetration anally for themselves, either with a partner or by themselves, or experimented with prostate play, whatever it might be, are more attuned to and are more receptive to like what's needed to penetrate. Like you have way more consideration for slowing down, way more appreciation for lube and for wetness, way mm-hmm. more like being way more attentive to like pressure and friction. Mm-hmm. Like the more like I've experimented with anal play and prostate play myself, mm-hmm. but if there's a guy listening that's like ever had any type of prostate play done with him, for him, whatever it might be, like you'll know you have to be relaxed and you have to be, you know, aroused and you have to be and you have to be ready for it. Like if you push for it and if you rush it, it hurts, it's painful. And so like guys that are more aware of that then take that mindset into their partner, you know, based sexual experience and just start to become aware of like, oh whoa, I'm penetrating this person, I'm you know, crossing that skin barrier. You know, I've got to be aware of like, okay, I've got to be aware of slowing down, of taking my time, of making sure there's appropriate and adequate lubrication, and that they're relaxed as well, that it's not tight, and that there's no pain being caused. So it's like just on a logical level, just that makes so much sense to me, and hopefully it's making sense to people that are listening as well. But then we can, you know, we think of like the more of the energetics of things as well. It's like starting to become aware of like that receptive or receiving energy of like what does it mean to like be penetrated on an energetic mm-hmm. level as well. Like how does it feel to kind of be in that you know, very, very typically, although this isn't always the case, like the person who's penetrating is also the person who's in that, could say maybe in the dominant position, or the person who's like being the masculine, right? The masculine is associated with the penetrative kind of force. The receiving or the receptive is the person who's, you know, typically, stereotypically the feminine energy. So it's like, okay, you're starting to like learn more and tap into your own feminine energy to receive and to surrender into being penetrated. So it gives you a greater understanding of like your own inner feminine if you're a guy. And then that allows you to then connect to, and the more you're aware of your own inner feminine, the more you're able to bring that out of and support it and nurture it and call it out in your partner as well. The more you're able to cultivate that in her, and create that space for her to surrender into it as well when you're the one that's being penetrative. So you've got like a lot of things that kind of go into this whole idea of like exploring anal play and like, I guess you're 100% right. Like a lot of it is like internalized homophobia, right? This idea of, so Eric Anderson, a social psychologist, talks about homo hysteria, which is this idea that like, when we've got a culture that recognizes both heterosexuality and homosexuality, but elevates heterosexuality above homosexuality. It's like, you know, being straight is the golden standard, right? And anything underneath, you know, being straight is considered deviant or wrong. And so we got guys that like in their mind have been conditioned or been told, or whether it's from their family, religion, whatever it is, that think that anything gay is less than being straight. And this idea of like internalized homophobia kind of comes from that. And so there's this idea that anal penetration is like just the domain of gay men, and that they're the only people that practice any type of anal penetration. But when we look at statistics and when we look at like data, it's about 1 in 3, you know, gay couples that practice receptive anal sex. And it's also about 1 in 3 heterosexual couples that practice any type of anal penetration on the guy as well. So you've got, it's just happening in the same, you know, in the same rates as well. So it's not this idea that it's like only for gay guys as well, something that needs to be overcome. So there's a lot of backstory and a lot of like things and ways we can approach the whole anal pleasure and anal receptivity conversation. But those are some of the things that I like to bring up, because they kind of add some groundedness and some you know, empirical data to the conversation, which I think is important, particularly for guys as well. I find guys to be quite, you know, quite fact driven and data driven as well.
Yeah, so it's so interesting. I also like to flick to history, because although it feels all-consuming, the society and the rules and the traditions that we all live under now, only 2,000 years ago with the Greeks, you know, the Greeks were this is my study, my focus was in ancient Greece and Rome, and sexuality in the ancient world, just what I studied and lectured in at university, and it was a predominantly homosexual environment. The male body was the ideal, and you would have numerous male lovers from a very young age, where you would be taught and schooled from, you know, at the gymnasium, at a place where you'd be able to meet up with someone and be guided into the erotic arts. And women were beautiful and loved and cherished, but to be a great lover for your wife, of course you had to have many male lovers. Mm. And so I think that... I think that, you know, it's not actually that long ago, a couple of thousand years, but that was a really accepted, really honorable way to live, and a really sort of embracing of the male figure and embracing of admiration for the male figure. That this society was also incredible in art and architecture and politics and education, and did a lot of incredible things. So both our societies would look at each other and sort of laugh and not recognize it, but on the general timeline of life and existence, it's interesting to see trends come and go. And when we fall into that space, again, we come right into our presence, right into our, you know, what's alive for us right now. Mm. And that societal stuff can definitely kind of move past.
Yeah. Yeah. I think like the one that, like, little piece of wisdom that I want to share on regards to like anal play and penetration is if you want to become a better lover, start exploring your own anal pleasure, start exploring your own anal penetration.
Absolutely. And for women listening as well, it's a really different role to be the penetrator. You learn how important intention is, you learn how to read the receiver. There's so much beauty in on both sides. So it's a really, really powerful experience from a woman's side.
Totally. And if I'm talking to guys about becoming multi-orgasmic as well, like one of the easiest ways to become a multi-orgasmic man is to learn how to have prostate orgasms, because you don't have a refractory period when you have a prostate orgasm. So you can keep on going and going and going and have as many prostate orgasms as you like in a single session. So oftentimes I feel like that gets left out of the conversation with regards to guys learning how to become multi-orgasmic and have non-ejaculatory orgasms, like a prostate orgasm through prostate stimulation through the hypogastric nerve is a non-ejaculatory orgasm. Like, it doesn't involve the ejaculation reflex. So I feel like there's like a whole part of this multi-orgasmic man conversation, you know, fostered by Mantak Chia and his sexual kung fu kind of proponents, mm-hmm. that is not even talked about. Prostate play and prostate stimulation and prostate orgasms are not even entered into that conversation. So I think there's like a really important piece of that puzzle as well.
Sorry. No, for sure. Right now, to whatever study it was that linked ejaculation control to prostate cancer. Did you see, you know, the big study? I'm sure you know a lot about it.
So there are four major studies about this. So this is something I get asked all the time when I talk about when I do men's work and men's groups. Someone always inevitably brings up not the study, but they usually tell me about an article they've read, probably one in The Guardian, which was like in 2004 or something like that. The study itself was like 21 times a month is like the perfect amount of times for guys to ejaculate, because it decreases your risk of prostate cancer. So that's like that's what usually gets quoted to me. And so that's based on one specific study, and that was like that's the oldest study so far. There's been three other studies on top of that, two actual studies from people looking at the same thing, and one meta-analysis. And so another study on top of that one that says 21 times a month or, you know, more frequent ejaculation decreases your risk, was use the same data set and use the same sample, and they did their own analysis a couple of years later, and they found that there's actually no effect. So there was no association between ejaculation frequency and prostate cancer. Then another study was done with a different sample of people, and this found a different sample of men. And this one found that that less ejaculation in early life but more ejaculation after the age of 50 is what is good for your prostate health. So they're like saying that, they're pretty much saying the opposite. In younger life, you should be abstaining from ejaculation, but in older life, you should be ejaculating more, which is like the complete opposite of what traditional Chinese medicine and all these tantric practices are talking about. And then there's another study as well, the meta-analysis, that looked at like all of this sort of stuff. And this is the most recent one in 2016, I believe. And it just said, look, there's no conclusive data to say that we can definitively, you know, have a causation effect between ejaculation frequency and prostate risk as well. So that's the study that I go off, which is that there's no conclusive data. There's no evidence to suggest that ejaculation frequency has any bearing on prostate cancer at all. But then I go on to say, or prostate risk or prostate health. And then I mm-hmm. like to say as well, on top of that, is if you're a guy and you're relying on the amount of times that you ejaculate each month for your prostate health, then you're missing the whole fucking point. You're missing the whole idea of prostate health in general, which is like lifestyle factors and diet and exercise and weight.
Smoking, and alcohol.
Yeah, and prostate massage as well. Like, are you taking care of your prostate by massaging it? Are you releasing tension from your pelvic floor, which can lead to prostatitis, which can then lead to prostate cancer? Like, if you're just relying on how many times you come throughout the month to take care of your prostate health, then I'm sorry, but you're missing the point entirely.
Yes, thank you so much for dispelling that myth. That is super, super powerful and super necessary. What about ejaculation fasting or cum fasting or withholding? There's a lot of talk about this right now. What do you say to someone who has just heard about it, it terrifies the hell out of, and they immediately think they're not good enough?
Yeah, so there's like two schools of thought I often find when guys kind of learn about this, is like the semen retention mentality, which is like your sexual kung fu, kind of like more esoteric spiritual side of things. And then there's like the NoFap camp as well, which is like these guys that are, you know, the NoFap November challenge, which is like, you know, we're not going to watch porn, we're not going to masturbate, we're not going to have sex, we're not going to bust the nut for, you know, a whole month. And so there's like these two schools of thought, which I think, you know, if they did some cross-pollinating and spoke to one another, it could be like a really interesting conversation. But I often find that like a lot of guys are worried that if they start to, you know, practice any type of NoFap or semen retention, that they're not going to be able to experience any pleasure. And so like the first thing I often have to educate guys about is like, you know, ejaculation doesn't equal orgasm. You know, oftentimes we have ejaculation and orgasm happen together, but, you know, you can have pleasurable sex and you can have pleasurable masturbation without ejaculating. You know, so oftentimes the taking of ejaculation off the table, a lot of guys think, well, if I just take ejaculation off the table, then that means there's no sex, that means there's no masturbating, that means there's no sexual experiences, because their ejaculation is so tied into, you know, it's a signifier that they've had sex, right? It's like if a guy doesn't come, then he's like, oh, it doesn't count, you know. So so there's this like really big significance around ejaculation. So so oftentimes that's the first thing I have to tell them, is like, look, even if you are doing semen retention, you can still self-pleasure. You can still, you know, tap into your sexual energy. You can still experience pleasure. Same with maybe the NoFap guys, these guys that are practicing, you know, no masturbation. It's like, doesn't mean that you can't still do like self-massage. It just doesn't mean you can't still like do some deep breathing exercises to move sexual energy through your body. In fact, I would say, if you're not doing any like masturbation or self-pleasure practices because you've fallen into that NoFap kind of camp, I'd say it's even more important to do your energy circulation practices and your breathing and stuff to mitigate the effect of maybe, you know, a lot of guys feel that they'll get blue balls or something like that. But it's blue balls, like energetically, is just stagnant energy, stagnant sexual energy that hasn't been moved. And, you know, there's more biological scientific ways we can think about it as well. But like one of the things that helps the most is like some pelvic floor massage or some deep breathing or some opening up of the nervous system and starting to loosen up the body to allow pressure to be relieved and to allow pleasure to be moved through the body. So often guys, these guys that come to me is like, I have to decipher which side of the fence they've fallen on. And then I have to do a little bit of educating around what it is that, you know, ejaculation kind of means to them. and that it's not necessarily just associated with pleasure. Like a lot of guys think the only pleasure they can experience is just like a 5-second sticky white crotch sneeze. It's like, well, actually there's all this other stuff that's pleasurable for you as well. So it does bring up a lot of, and it brings up a lot of stories. Like when we take ejaculation off the table, as I've been kind of referring to, like I often like using a couple analogy here is like if a guy doesn't ejaculate when he's had sex and there's no like conversation about it, oftentimes like a woman, for example, will go, whoa, he didn't come. Is there something wrong? Like, am I not, he didn't enjoy himself, right? Because we have this idea that ejaculation is a signifier that the guy's orgasm, that the guy's had a good time. And so if he doesn't come and there's no conversation or you know, communication around it, oftentimes a woman will go, oh, did I do something wrong? Am I not hot enough? Did I not do the thing that he liked or whatever it is? Or she might, you know, have another story, be like, what the fuck's wrong with him? He didn't ejaculate, didn't come. Like, why is there something wrong with his body? Like, whatever it might be, is he weird? And then, you know, if he's been drinking too much, this has been my experience as well. Before I started doing any sexual practices, if I had like had too much to drink and I couldn't ejaculate when I was having sex, then I'd be like, well, something's fucking wrong with me. You know, I'd blame the booze. And then if like that story kept on playing out, then it would be like, oh no, something's wrong with her. She's not hot enough. She's not my type, or she didn't do that thing that I like in porn, whatever it might be. So we don't like no one's really acknowledging this like signifier of ejaculation in a couple's relationship. Because oftentimes like it's the signifier that sex is over as well, right? Like I'm sure this will relate to a lot of people. As soon as the guy comes, you know, that's the end of sex, right? Roll over, have a cigarette and go to sleep, right? That's the Hollywood style way of portraying, you know, a couple's sexual encounter. So this cultural significance or like couple significance of what ejaculation means for people, once it's taken out of the equation, can bring up a lot of these stories and can bring up a lot of like, kind of like as you mentioned, bring up a lot of fear around like, oh, what does this mean? You know, am I not good enough? Am I not, you know, worthy enough or whatever it might be? So it's a really important conversation to have, especially as a couple.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, this is exactly what this podcast is about, is there are other ways, full stop. You know, the way you've been doing it for your whole life, you know, maybe working and you can continue a lot of that, but there are other ways. And I love that we spoke into receptivity or anal play or practicing the different, playing with the different dynamics there. We even began to talk about the nerve endings or the links to the parasympathetic nervous system and the ring. It's just, there's so much within there that is this whole other playground of play and pleasure. And I know for me, I want to experience as much as I can. You know, I have this drive to really look into my potential as a human being, as like the sort of physical body with all this biomagnetic weird electrical stuff going on as well, and to explore and to share really the ways in which I've worked through fears or blockages or preventative stories in my sex life, and how that's changed things for me in a day-to-day relating way as well. Because it's potent stuff, you know, how you're relating with your partner, if you're consciously committing to doing something, if you are, terrifies me touching someone's anus and perhaps going inside, but I know if I do it, I'm going to move past my idea or some blockages that I have around, I don't know, penetrating life as a being. Or I'm not good at receiving, I can't take things, I can't surrender. Well, if I really work on that as a woman, as a being, perhaps when change comes my way, I'll be better equipped. You know, there's all these, it sounds a little bit, you know, spiritual perhaps, or esoteric or wah-wah, but it is really, really, it's potent when I see people really embody it and step into it. There's so many, so many different secrets or surprises waiting.
Yeah, totally. And I think like the like piece of advice I often give to people is be curious. You know, be curious about your own body. Mm-hmm. Be curious about your own pleasures. Be curious about your partner. Be curious about her body. Be curious about her pleasure. And also, you know, not only just pleasures, but like where your boundaries and limitations are. Like be curious about like where your edge is. Like be curious about where your partner's edge is. You know, have those conversations. Ask questions about what they're open to doing, what they're not open to doing. Mm-hmm. And oftentimes when we start to like define boundaries and we start to like have these conversations of knowing where the parameters are, we go, oh, fantastic. I know where my edges are. I know where the boundaries are. I know where the parameters are in this container. I can just show up completely now in the space that I've been given. Now I've got like a, now I have a physical space or a, you know, metaphysical container for me to actually be generous in and to give as much as possible and to surrender as deeply as I can within that boundaried container. So oftentimes, you know, when we start asking questions and being curious about exploring our bodies and exploring our partner's bodies, we can go so much deeper because we've been given the permission, I suppose, and we've been given the parameters for us to do that. And like speaking to that just a little bit more as well is if you're like you kind of shared, you know, if you're a person who's, you know, wanting to explore, you know, anal play or anal penetration with your partner, to kind of circle back to that, you know, oftentimes I try and frame this as like, instead of pushing to do something, so instead of feeling like, oh, I need to do this, like, oh, because I've heard this on this podcast and Cam said that I need to explore anal play now, like I'm going to have to go out and do it and like push my boundaries to get there, as opposed to feeling curious about something and feeling pulled to do it and being like, oh, this is like, oh, it's a little bit edgy for me, but I'm kind of like a little bit nervous, a little bit excited about it and kind of like want to know what's on the other side and like and have this like little bit of desire and this little, you know, feeling pulled to do something as opposed to like pushing towards something. I always think that's a good rule of thumb to follow that pull rather than that push when you're doing something sexually. So it's like I usually, you know, develop that curiosity first and that awareness first. And the more that you do that, the more you'll notice that you'll be able to tell when something's pulling you as opposed to when something's like a push for you, where there probably is a boundary there that you're not ready to experiment with yet, or if it's a hard boundary that you never want to go there. So that's often something that I encourage people to cultivate, is that discernment around, you know, if something's, you know, following your curiosity and following your desire and your pull, rather than like being pushed and being forced into doing something.
That's such an epically powerful piece to nearly finish on, to stay curious and to go with the pull, not the push.
Yeah, yeah.
I really like that. To finish off, is there any secret to a wider, more encompassing and explorative sexual experience that you wish to share? Is there any kind of, is this something that you wish you knew sooner, or
A secret? There's a few, but I think to narrow it down to one is non-attachment. Right? So non-attachment, like this was a massive piece of the puzzle for me in my own sexual journey. And to kind of sum this up is like, you know, a lot of us use sex as a way to feel validated or to feel appreciated or to feel desired by our partner, which is not necessarily, there's nothing necessarily wrong with that, but it's like, be mindful of that first, start to notice that, because when we start to have these attachments to sex and these attachments to, you know, what we should get from sex, what we're trying to get from it, if we're not mindful of it, if we're not speaking into it, if we're not being acknowledging of it, then oftentimes we fall into this trap of being attached to what sex should look like as well. It's like, in order for me to get this validation from sex, I need for my partner to have an orgasm. I need for my wife, I need to ejaculate, or I need to look a certain way when we have sex, or sex needs to be a certain way. We need to do a certain thing. And so we fall into this trap of like being goal oriented with regards to sex as well. We become attached to a subconscious or even a conscious goal about like, okay, I need to make my partner come, or I need to come, or I need to penetrate, or whatever it is. And we become attached to that as well, that specific act of sex. And so oftentimes it's like important to, and this was important for me as well, and this is, I guess, why I share it as a secret, is start to develop a bit of like a, and it's not detachment, it's not disassociation, no, it's non-attachment. And we can, you know, you can talk to Buddhist monks about the difference between those two things. But starting to give yourself permission to explore, you know, sex without those attachments, like, you know, start to just disentangle, you know, those ways that things should look like and what you should get and what your expectations are from sex. Start to just loosen your hold on those things and start to just allow sex to to be this open book and to be this open-ended thing of being like, okay, cool, I'm just going to explore and see what happens here and not get attached to any specific outcome or any specific way that it should look or whatever it might be. So that's been a huge learning experience for me, and it's something that, you know, is still a learning experience. I still kind of fall into the trap of thinking that sex should be a certain way or should have to have a certain element to it or whatever it might be. You know, once I started going down this road of Tantra and sacred sexuality, I was like, every time I have sex, it needs to be this epic sacred sexuality 3-hour long tantric experience, and that became an attachment, you know. So it's like right. And so it's having to work through that and recognizing that there's room for quickies and not so sacred mm-hmm. sexual experiences as well. So it's like, okay, you know, having to work through that attachment, and there's always going to be attachments as you grow and as you evolve, there'll be something else that you feel attached to that you have to kind of work through as well. So that's been a huge learning experience and a big secret in my life as well. So I felt called to share that. That is epic.
I really, really resonate with that and love it. You know, I've had stories, I just like can't orgasm, you know, with just penetration. And I was super, super attached to that story. And then the moment I just became super unattached to that and was deeply, deeply in the moment, the surprise, that gift that came, that sort of unlocking, that opening was beyond words. And I know if I tried to do it over and over with, you know, it literally came out of divine union. It wasn't a structured plan, right, now we're going to tackle this issue of yours. Mm. It was like, let's just fall deeper into each other and see what happens.
Beautiful.
And so, yeah, I love it, an attachment. Well, Cam, what do you have coming up? How can people find you? You are such – hang on, before you even answer that, Cam is super, super, super well-researched. You know, there's a lot of people doing this work who are experience-based or who have done a few workshops, you know, here and there, or sort of found their teachings in more less academic ways. But you've got a lot of that, but you've also got this really solid academic background like myself. So I really resonate with that. And I really appreciate that, because you're reaching a whole lot more people. Mm. And your posts, I can vouch for them. They always pop up on my phone, these giant penis images. And they're just like, my kids are like, Mom, you know, what is this, right? You're normalizing sexuality, you are normalizing men's experiences, and you're changing lives. So how can these listeners hear you?
Thank you so much. The Instagram is probably the easiest way to find me. So that's at the Cam Fraser. And I, like you said, try and share as much educational content on Instagram as possible. I think there's a need for you know, data-driven, scientifically validated, medically accurate info on Instagram, especially in the world of sexuality. So I try and bring that to my posts. So if you click on any post on my Instagram account, you will learn something, I guarantee it. And the other way you can find me is through my website, which is cam-fraser.com. And I've got on there an upcoming course called Outperform a Porn Star, which is a bit of a tongue-in-cheek title about looking at like male porn stars, like how many male porn stars have multiple energetic, non-ejaculatory, full-bodied orgasms. It's fucking zero. So if you can learn how to separate orgasm and ejaculation and have these expanded states of pleasure, you're well on your way to outperforming any male performer on screen. So that's what the 6-week course is coming up. It's a Outperform a Porn Star course.
If this podcast has spiked your interest for Secrets of Spiritual Sex, Cam's 6-week course on Outperform a Porn Star, I think will take you to like the advanced version of that.
So. Yeah, totally, totally. We go into everything we spoke about today and more. Yeah.
Epic. Well, thank you for what you do, Cam. And I'm sure there'll be a part two at some stage.
That'd be amazing. Thank you, Nikki.
The Secrets of Spiritual Sex was brought to you out of the desire to make accessible the latest research and inspiring developments in the field of sex, intimacy, and relationships. There is so much more to sex than friction and brief peaks, and this podcast seeks to provide a pleasure-based sexual education where potential and curiosity are cultivated. Make sure you subscribe and share this episode with your lovers, your friends, and your family. I am Nikki Rhodes, a sex and relationship coach, And you can find me on Instagram at @NikkiRhodes_, or jump onto my website for more info on courses, retreats, and one-on-one coaching sessions at www.nikkir.com.